Hello and welcome to the FinTech Newscast. How are you doing this week, Steve?
I'm doing just great, John. How are you?
Great. Looks like Intuit's gotten into some trouble these days.
I saw that. Yeah, very interesting FinTech news from a regulatory or DOJ side. So Intuit acquired Credit Karma so they could take out a competitor that was offering a lot of the free services that Intuit charges for, things like, you know, checking out your credit score, filing for taxes, you know, all the other things as well. And this actually is interesting because it has a lot of echoes to the things we saw a few weeks ago in Congress in terms of the arguments that were made about Mark Zuckerberg acquiring Instagram as a way to quash the competition. So it's kind of a parallel, but it's pretty interesting. I've always been a proponent of taking away the power of the tax filing companies to charge outrageous amounts of money for something that should be free or low cost. So I am heartened to see this investigation taking place now.
So the whole idea is the DOJ might prevent this acquisition from going through at all, yeah?
That's the idea. And I think they can either reverse or unwind an acquisition. I'm not sure what the actual mechanism there is. But the argument is that, again, by allowing Intuit to buy Credit Karma, they can just quash a competitor and keep their market dominance and keep charging outrageous fees for their services.
And I know Intuit's one of your favorite companies. You know, I didn't think they were that sketchy. You know, it wasn't that big a deal. Maybe you were overreacting. But I saw in that same article I was looking at that they are hiding their free file service from the Google search results. So people would accidentally go to their paid product instead when they didn't need to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's actually a pretty great episode of I think Patriot Act by Hasan Minhaj on Netflix that gets into the whole Intuit dark patterns things as well, and how they shuffle people away from the free version and towards the paid version, even if they have a very simple tax filing profile.
Yeah. I think I'm starting to come around on the Intuit is evil take that you have there. They want to get all the credit for it without actually offering it. So yeah, that's not great. But what is great is that we have the co-founders of iBank on the podcast this week. We have Michael Lindsay and Trey Markell joining us. Thanks for joining us this week, guys.
Thanks for having us. We're excited to be here.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Thank you, gentlemen.
Well, I love the URL. You know what? Let's get that out of the way first thing. How in the world did you get iBank.com, that URL, and how many companies have offered to buy it back away from you?
Yeah, it's actually a great question. It's an interesting story. It's been in the family since the 90s. My father had it as a part of a corporate solution that he had back then. And, you know, pre-dot-bomb times, you know, URLs weren't as popular as they were kind of coming into the early 2000s. But he had kind of gobbled it up. It actually was a bank in Minneapolis, Minnesota for a little while. And I think they had gone out of business or something like that. And through a deal, he had kind of gobbled it up and used it and had it just sitting around for years and years and years. And then we decided to kind of do something with it. But over the last 20 years, oh my goodness, we've had Apple come to us, investment banks, mortgage banks, all sorts of different types of companies come to us and offer offer some either equity or some money for the name. And we kind of stood our ground and said, we're going to do something with it.
Huh. So Apple's coming to you and you're like, well, maybe I'll do something with it. And that convinced you to not take those shares that would have been worth $40 million now?
Yeah, right, exactly. I wish Apple were offering us shares. That would have been lovely. But their strategy was a bit different. We've had several offers for the domain name and the incontestable trademark that we have with the name, but we're standing strong.
I can tell you talked to your lawyers, the incontestable trademark.
Good, you got it.
Okay. Well, so tell us now, what have you done with this URL? What is iBank and what are you all about?
Yeah. So for the last 10 years, Mike and I have been building a different fintech company. We started back in 2010 called Centric Software, and it's a large operational software platform in the debt financing industry for B2B lending and B2C lending as far as portfolio management, CRM, ERP, investor pools, and stuff like that. And, you know, we've had a lot of great success with consolidating a lot of different kind of fin technologies, underwriting technologies under one platform. It was a massive undertaking. A lot of people looked at us and thought we were crazy. But with some partners that we have, we built it. We've been building it over the last 10 years and it's been successful and we're still building it today. And we offer a lot of different technologies under one roof. During the last 10 years, being in underwriting, as I'm sure you guys can imagine, the amount of bank statements you look at, I mean, it's insane. The tens of thousands of bank statements you look at. And Mike and I found ourselves looking at bank statements one day. And, you know, when you're looking at bank statements for business owners, you know, you look at categories and you look at their transactions and you find yourself walking down memory lane with your own life and saying, oh, I remember when I, you know, you see an American Airlines transaction and, you know, it brings back a memory of my friends going, you know, going to Thailand or something with, you know, with a bunch of buddies. So we kind of caught ourselves in this weird kind of a flux vortex, if you will, of saying, you know what? There's so many amazing memories behind these transactions. There's so much more behind these black and white transactions that people see other than just logging into their bank and seeing debit, credit, so on and so forth. So Mike and I instantly took the approach with the iBank name. A, we really wanted a consumer-facing product, not B2B-facing product that consolidated all the different types of features that you see out there all under one roof. We kind of wanted to bring it all in one place. But on top of that, we wanted the money management experience to just be a different one. Considering that behind your transactions, there was so much more material there, so much more value there, how could we show a user that money management experience, the memories, the songs, the videos behind those transactions, how could we show that? And iBank is what we built. We kind of socialized, if you will, the money management experience along with consolidating the different types of tech under one place. And that's the vision.
So you can kind of scroll through your expenses as if they're memories. Yeah. Well, they kind of are memories.
Yeah, it's exactly what they are. I mean, you go buy certain products on a day-to-day basis or you share experiences with friends and family and loved ones. And when you log into your bank account today, they're just transactions, but they're more than that. We all know that. What's behind that transaction? So Mike and I use the analogy all the time. We say, you know, we talk to investors and business partners. We ask them if they have any children, is your daughter married? No point intended. And we ask them, you know, listen, when you look at your bank statement, let's assume for 2 seconds you bought your daughter's wedding dress. Instead of looking at your bank statement and seeing that kind of a potentially aggressive number, how much more meaningful would it be if you just saw that photo of you walking your daughter down the aisle in this gorgeous wedding dress? Would that money management experience just mean a little more to you, right? And we also use the same analogy with first-time home buyers. You know, if you bought your first home and you've got your family there standing next to your sold sign, that down payment sitting in your bank statement means a heck of a lot more with that beautiful photo of you and your beautiful family next to this gorgeous house you just bought as your first home. You know, it's an engaging experience. It means more to me. And that's what we're trying to accomplish.
So how does that translate into the app or the interface that people will see? I love the videos, by the way, on the website. You guys look so cute together on your Valentine's Day post. the picture with Trey with the rose in his mouth is my new wallpaper. How does that interface work with the site and the app for how people interact with that?
Yeah, so basically, just like any other money management app, we allow our users to connect all their different bank accounts, credit card accounts, savings accounts through our integration with a company that I'm sure you guys are familiar with called Plaid. And we pull in all the transaction information and we do a lot of the regular things that a regular personal financial management app will do. We categorize things, we show your inflow and outflow of cash. But what's unique about the iBank app in the interface is that we allow our users to actually tag photos in their transactions. And so rather than scrolling through a bank statement, which is line item after line item, you're now actually looking at actual images and pictures of what you've spent those dollars on. In addition to that, we have the ability to actually, you know, tag friends and track how much you're spending with certain friends or on certain adventures and different things together. And the idea behind it is that, you know, we all can probably collectively agree that managing money is important. I don't think that you'll get a ton of pushback across the board on that, but the reality is that there is a situation where, you know, a lot of people don't effectively manage money, especially younger adults who have lots of, you know, student loan debt and tend to have lower salaries out of the gate, out of college and things like that. And so while we all may collectively agree that managing money is important, the reality is it's not always engaging. It's not very fun. I'm the type of person who will go into Excel and, you know, build out the crazy budget report and really nerd out on it. But Trey, you know, my partner, his eyes will glaze over if we start doing something like that. So we really thought to ourselves, how do we make this experience, which is so, so important, especially younger adults early on in life to establish those good money management habits, how do we make that experience fun and engaging and motivating to bring that generation in to want to really get on top of this?
So then you can connect with other people as well. It's a social thing, not just on your own, right?
So at the moment, it's kind of both. The accounts are not connected with other users. So let me get this out of the way. We're definitely not sharing, you know, how much money is in your bank account with anybody else and sharing more transactions with other people. We obviously, you know, we take security and privacy and all that sensitive information very seriously. But the idea of it is that you as a user can kind of build out your social circle in the app and, you know, add friends, add contacts and adventures and tag everything together, but we're not necessarily showing you, you know, other people's account information or anything like that.
Are safe.
Yeah.
So you can still someday be in the future the Tinder of financial sharing.
Right, exactly. We're gonna swipe right on that transaction.
Yeah. Well, you both went to this restaurant three times. You know, you're a good match.
Right.
Who knows?
Right. And what's interesting and kind of fun about it too is, you know, similar to like a Venmo or a money transferring app, where essentially, you know, if we all go to dinner together and, you know, we buy dinner, or, you know, I buy dinner, you know, if we want to split dinner, you're going to Venmo me, obviously you're going to send me that Venmo with that amount and, you know, a cool little emoji or something. And we all obviously know how much dinner was because we need to split dinner. So though the system doesn't have any transparency to other users on your financial situation, there are going to be situations where you are going to know, like, you know, hey, listen, I purchased dinner. I'd like to iBank you, if you will, a future thing we'd love to hear out of all of our users' apps. But also adventure planning. One of the biggest features of the app we have is really planning, budgeting, in a connected way with friends and family for trips and weddings and adventures and anything you guys do to get together. So it's always been difficult to get everyone on the same page as far as expenditures and costs and who's doing this and who's going to pay for that and how are we going to pay this person back and who's going to manage it. So the connectivity of the app and iBank is great on the adventure piece, because as millennials, we just love our experiences. We love our travel. It's something we value, and we very much value that travel and that experience with our friends and our family and our loved ones. But doing it all in one app, it doesn't really exist at the moment. And the connectivity in that particular way is something that we are building into the app, where everyone can do it together all under one platform, which kind of, you know, makes it fun.
I think I've read somewhere that a big part of the reason why Venmo became so popular is because they have that social component and you can actually see emojis, right? You know, a little jug of beer, or a little cocktail, pizza, or whatever, and sort of creating that emotional connection is really important. But I'm really interested here in what you mentioned about the adventure. So this is basically where you create a page and you can sort of split expenses and maybe put money towards a group goal and make it a more social thing. Is that the case here?
Yeah, so the adventures piece is really exciting. It's essentially group goals, group savings goals, and group budgeting for events. So I can speak anecdotally on many times where my particular group of friends has a very, very serious case of FOMO. like to the point where at the very last minute, if three people are going, all of a sudden they're everybody wants to go, all 10 or 15 of us. And I know for a fact that a lot of us, myself included, haven't always saved up for these trips or get convinced to go to Coachella at the last minute, and they end up throwing, you know, everything on a credit card, and they're paying 29% interest on that, and they're putting themselves in a financial hole. So the adventures piece is really about trying to empower our users to really be able to live their best lives. And we want to show them that, hey, you can afford to go on this trip. You can afford to do these things if you plan for it, if you budget, and you know, you're smart about your money management on the way. And so what the app allows you to do is set up an adventure, tell us when it's going to be. Let's say we're all going in a non-COVID era to internationally travel out to Thailand or something like that. Then we all know that we need to save up, you know, maybe 2, 3, 4 grand, depending on how long we're going to be there and how far away it is. We all have some kind of goal that we want to raise for ourselves to be able to afford just the day-to-day expenses while we're on that trip. And so the app will allow us to set that up. And then when we're on the trip, we'll actually help you tag when you spend money, you can tag transactions in the adventure, and we'll actually help you keep you on budget to make sure that, hey, you allocated and you saved, you know, 2 grand for this, and you're at, you know, $850, and you have, you know, whatever amount left to go play with. And we'll keep you kind of honest on making sure that you have saved up for it beforehand, and that when you're actually there, you're not just overspending and putting yourself in a hole. And so it's really about trying to encourage our users to make smart financial decisions early, so that they actually can do all the things that they want to do and share those fun experiences together without either having to miss out or, you know, generally put it all on a credit card.
It reminds me of a principle in behavioral economics where basically, in order for you to achieve your goals, you have to make them public. Right? You have to say, I will do X, Y, Z, and, you know, friend X or Y, please hold me accountable. So this is a good way to do that. Did you guys consult with any behavioral economists while you were going through this? Or is this something that you came up on your own as a way to kind of take advantage of your generation's desire to be social and have kind of that social proof aspect to the things you do?
We didn't consult a behavioral psychologist or anything like that on this. We did a ton of research, and obviously we are both millennials in this generation as well, but we did a lot of research on that market. And I think you're absolutely right about kind of that public accountability thing. Once you make a goal public, it does become a little bit harder to not hit it, because you're facing a little bit more scrutiny and social pressures. So I think, you know, one of the main things, which shouldn't be a surprise for anybody on the call here, is that millennials are content creators and curators. We are the generation of the Facebooks, the Instagrams, the social media, even the MySpace, to go way back. We want to create content, and we are really driven by experiences over material goods in general. So today, it's more important for an influencer or a friend to show that they went and spent a bunch of money at Coachella because they were at Coachella than it is for them to say, hey, I just bought a new Rolex. Everybody look at my new Rolex. And so we tried to kind of tap into that market of, okay, we have this market of people who want to create content and share things, and they're comfortable with that. And they're really valuing more than trying to buy a specific product or a material good. They really value the experience economy. They want to go on trips. They want to show that they've been all over the world and that they're doing fun stuff. And, you know, for better or worse, that's kind of the era that we're in with this generation.
Speaking of the question du jour, I guess, right? Because you are looking at people to make those social connections, and kind of that social component is so important to your app and your service. How has COVID-19 affected this stuff, either in terms of the adventures feature or, you know, the P2P payments or any sort of aspects of the app or the service?
So it's interesting for us. We've got two fintech companies, Centric Software, we've had for 10 years, iBank's a newer one. We launched our MVP only a few months ago, so it's quite new. So we don't have a ton of relative data for COVID-19 as far how it's affected the app as far as travel and the adventures piece, only because we're so new. What I will tell you is because of, quarantining and staying home orders, as we all know, everyone's been forced online, where typically even a smaller percentage of the population would walk into a bank or their financial institution. It's really kind of forced everyone to use a mobile app or to use their computer to transact on a daily basis. So traffic to the website, we've seen a nice spike. Signups, we saw a bit of a spike. But as far as some of the features in the app, we haven't really seen too much, only because we're so new. Our current centric software fintech business, however, definitely a nice dip when you have a lot of Americans not able to repay loans, or businesses able to repay loans, and a lot of our clients are lenders. And when the lenders themselves don't get repayment of their loans back, they typically don't pay their vendors. So we saw a nice little dip there. It did come back. It is coming back slowly, but that's what we've seen so far.
Just to add to that, if it's okay, I think it's a very, very interesting time for us with COVID, just because it is obviously now more than ever. And my gosh, we've heard that statement from every commercial I've ever seen now. Now more than ever, we're in it together, right?
We're with you. Right, thanks, right. Home Depot. Yeah.
but it's true that, like, right now, it is really important for people to keep a good eye on their spending in an era of financial uncertainty and, high unemployment. It is really important that we are on top of, saving money and making sure we're not overspending. And obviously this adventure piece and traveling and things like that, it's not like we can all get on a plane tomorrow and go to Italy or something like that and have that be a safe thing to do. But we actually feel that it does open an opportunity for those of us that have not lost our jobs, that are still receiving steady income. Well, now's the time, if you're not really going out and going to bars and doing that stuff that you might normally be doing, you probably have a few extra bucks. Why don't you set that money aside for 2021 or 2022 or whenever this COVID thing is gonna kind of die down so that you can afford a nice fun trip together. And so it's been interesting from a sales perspective on just kind of like our messaging around, we don't want to encourage you to get on a plane right now, but we want to encourage you to save money and to put some of the money that you might be spending out at the bars aside for future fun experiences and adventures together. The other kind of area that it's had an interesting impact for us, we have recently been on the money raising grind, and it's just been interesting talking to investors about, what they're investing in at this point in time. We were a little squeamish at first, thinking that there would not be a big market for investors that are interested in putting money into a startup like this. But we've actually found it to be on the contrary. A lot of money is, we've got very low interest rates, obviously. So investors and financial institutions are looking for big creative plays to invest in new opportunities. And we've also found like investors that typically focus on maybe, retail and food and beverage and things like that are branching out into other industries because those have been really affected by COVID. So it's been interesting all around, I think on all aspects.
Pretty interesting. I think what I've seen with the metrics kind of details the fact that there's been a lot of, there's been a lot of activity in fintech this the first half of the year, despite COVID, but it seems to be mostly aimed at more established players, right? Sort of the C and D rounds and possibly beyond that. And it seems to be, at least from what I've seen, sort of a drought in investments at the seed and A stage levels. But it sounds like you've had the opposite experience.
It's definitely been interesting. We're not seeing a drought, at least for our particular project, for some of the things that we're trying to do. Obviously, this is a big vision, consolidated, large software platform type of vision. I'm not sure maybe if that is steering certain investors our way with their eyes kind of perking up a little bit. But to Mike's point, a lot of the angels and a lot of the kind of the family offices we're talking to are really engaged, and some of them know fintech, some of them don't know fintech. We have a nice client base currently with our Centric software products. We've reached out to those organizations, and you know, they know us, and we manage tens of millions of dollars of theirs in our Centric platform. So you know, they seem to have a bit more of a an okay understanding of what we could build, you know, in the future. But yeah, we're a drought for us is definitely not what we've seen for this particular project.
So you mentioned that you guys just finished the MVP. So you've only had, you're one of those few companies we've talked to who've only had COVID-19 experience. You have no idea what it would have done before and what it's going to do after, which is kind of interesting. So as you're developing the app, what do you see this growing into?
So I'm glad you asked the question. So Mike and I's real goal is to generate a new experience. We really, really want to see a money management, PFM, money transferring, group goal savings type of experience where if you take a millennial's life and you look at their life full circle, they have transactions in all different aspects of their life. They have planning, they have budgeting, they have car payments, insurance payments, you know, rent, they have to split bills with roommates. We looked at our own lives and we said, if we were to come full circle with our own lives, just like we look at our business lending and consumer lending companies, we look at their day-to-day operations in life, we wanted to do our best to cover the full circle as much as humanly and, you know, possible, if we possibly could. And that's the goal. That's the goal, is to really try to understand how can we touch all the different aspects of money management and money transferring in a day-to-day life. Now, what this could become into, one thing that we've discovered just recently that really kind of blew us away is our target market were the millennials. Millennials understand social, we're content, you know, creators like Mike had expressed. This was kind of the niche that we knew would understand what we're doing, like what we're doing, buy into what we're doing, and really kind of be a long-term user for us. With that said, we have found it extremely interesting. My parents are in their late 60s, and they're getting to the point in their life where we ask them what they want for their birthday, we ask them what they want for Christmas or a holiday, and they come to me and they say, Trey, I just want your time. I just want to spend time with you and your brothers and your sisters. And what we're discovering in the iBank app is we're allowing families to plan together to experience that time. Mike and I could buy each other gifts and we love it, but our parents in the older generation, they just want to spend time with their children. They just want to spend time with their grandchildren. And we're seeing in our analytics for the accounts we do have, some generations that are much older than the millennial generation. And we look at them and we asked a few questions and they said exactly this. It's allowing for our parents to schedule time, plan for time, budget with us and our grandkids so that we can experience that time and then look back and obviously budget on what that time cost us and have a bit of a memory of what that time looked like. So we're slowly seeing this come to life, and Mike and I's jaws literally hit the floor, and we said, you know, millennials is obviously our target market, but we're seeing a more of a full circle approach here with the millennial. They have a parent, they have some children potentially, they have a grandparent potentially, and we're bringing their full life under one platform, and it's been remarkable. It's absolutely been remarkable.
So part of where Trey's going with this is, you know, part of the future development on the horizon is catering some of these features to that generation and kind of bifurcating out, you know, different kind of product lines within iBank for the, you know, for the boomer or the older generation and kind of bringing in some stuff that can kind of link everything together. Additionally, in terms of features that we're working on, you know, obviously peer-to-peer money transferring. We will have charitable donation features in the app, automatic roommate bill splitting. So if you know, the electricity bill is different every month, but internet's the same, you know, somebody's got to do the math and figure out who owes who what. We want to have that taken care of for our users. We have some premium features coming later down the road for managing more of the investor portfolios that our users might have for the more affluent financially savvy millennials that are out there and users that are out there that want to kind of look at their stock portfolios, not necessarily trading those stocks, but just kind of bringing in that to complete the financial picture. And then, right. You know, lots more on the horizon as it relates to, you know, bringing this app to fruition and getting all the different things that you would ever want to do with money in terms of viewing it and sending it and spending it all into one platform.
Yeah, we see that a lot with the rebundling of fintechs, offering more and more features and getting a larger piece of someone's financial picture. So you're pretty young as far as the app is concerned, or the iBank side of it. Now, of course, you want to grow it up and be huge. So I ask you, at this point, who would be your dream company to come in and try to buy you out? Or you could answer, who would you want to buy out someday if you could? Who would be the great partner?
Oh, that's a great question. I'd be down to buy Plaid, but Visa just did for $5.5 billion.
Yeah.
Financial aggregation is obviously a big key to what we're trying to do here. So we're integrated both with Yodlee and Plaid on the back end for iBank. But as far as acquiring companies, you know, I haven't put a ton of thought to that, Mike. I'm not sure if you have, but I think the dream buyer from us, you know, I think if you strategically look at what we're trying to do, we've already had a few pretty major banks come to us and ask us to license the UI, the experience for a lot of their customers. I'm in the system. We've had a lot of clients come to, or a lot of partners come to us and say, you guys should reverse merge into an FDIC shell and become a bank yourself, which is an interesting thought. But you know, I think the dream buyer with our name, I haven't heard a ton of super awesome stellar stories about acquisitions from Apple, but I think an Apple acquisition would be totally cool only because of our name, what we're all about and some of the things we're trying to do. But I think realistically, you're looking at a big fund or a bank to acquire iBank in the future.
Just to add to that, I think, you know, another interesting thing about us is that we are obviously fintech, but we do have this social element, and notwithstanding all the monopolistic types of hearings that we're seeing in the news today, it actually does open us up to be potentially palatable for a tech company to acquire us. Or a social media kind of tech giant, even, you know, outside of just a traditional bank. But that is, the banking route is also a potential option. You know, we could definitely see being acquired by a company that wants to turn iBank into a real, true, you know, whether it's brick and mortar or just a kind of a neo online actual bank. You know, that could definitely happen. But yeah, I think it's hard to say at the moment who we would want to buy us. Right now, we just want to grow and you know, we want to keep it close to the chest for as long as we can and enjoy the ride.
Yeah, you do have that very very strong position in social media appeal, and then also on the financial side, obviously. So yeah, either side that wanted to get into the other would make sense. And it sounds like you guys are executing well. You might have to be fending off more offers besides just the name.
We hope so. That'd be wonderful.
What a problem you guys have. Terrible. All right, great. Yeah, thanks a lot for joining us this week. That's Trey Markell and Michael Lindsay, the co-founders of the very enviable to have name, iBank.com, joining us. Great job so far. The app looks great, and keep up the good work.
Thank you guys. Yeah, appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Please hit subscribe to keep up with this and the latest in fintech news, and thank you for listening.